from 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Linda Ness.
Just seen freshly laundered Smalls, and we've got some of the cast and the writers here.
Kathy Dunbar.
Are you one of the writers, Kathy? You take part in it?
Yeah? I take part in it. I haven't been a writer this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as performers, how is it put together?
Well, I think we all sit down and write stuff and think about it and rewrite, and people go away and write, and then we talk about it, and then we start to improvise around it. It's a process. Maybe this evening will be slightly different from this afternoon, but generally it'll be the same. So there's a quite a long process of putting it together, and before you even get to the practicing and rehearsing and stuff like that.
We have Flora, and you were very, very good, Flora, I have to say. I thought you were absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
You're still at school, are you?
Yeah, I'm at Hills Road Sixth Form at the moment.
But you're wanting to go into acting, I'm kind of assuming.
Script writing, hopefully, eventually.
Really? Yes, you were very, very good.
Kay Blaney.
And Kay, you're one of the writers, I think, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. And it's The Cycle of Life, which is, and The Pink Overall, so it could be called either or.
That was a great piece because it talked about growing up and watching your mother doing the washing. And then in the end, you were looking after her and doing her washing.
Absolutely, yeah, which is how it goes, isn't it? We're the children, we're being looked after. And because people are living so long in this day and age, you know, all being well, living have luck, that we end up caring for our parents. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, watching all of those years, not honestly, never even lifting a finger.
I know, and being really ungrateful and never thinking about what they're doing for you.
Absolutely. And honestly, jumping over those piles, just having fun while she was doing all of the stooping, bending and washing.
Yeah, it was very touching. That was great.
But I think really just I wanted to sum up that whole cycle of life and the cycle of the washing, so the metaphors between those. And the pink overall is an original. We had to go in the loft. That is the overall that my mother used to wear. My mother was in the audience today, and my grandmother used to wear it. So the piece is close to my heart.
I'm Sarah Bayliss.
And you're one of the writers as well, Sarah?
Yes, I wrote a couple of sketches. I did the historical writing, the Byron sketch and the Stains of War, which is set in the World War I military hospital in Cambridge, which not many people know. There used to be a World War I military hospital where the university library is. There was a military hospital right bang in the middle of Cambridge. So I'm always interested in turning the facts into drama, you know, going back to the history and the archives and creating drama around that. That's my real interest.
Yeah. No, well, it really, really worked well. Yeah. It was absolutely brilliant. Some of the pieces were very, very touching, and some of them were really, really funny. I mean, synchronised ironing, that was great. Who came up with that?
I think we all just played, and actually we went on a workshop pre this because we are a devising company. We have an idea. Our idea's been washing. So all of the activities that we've been involved in have involved washing. And we went on this workshop where, in fact, Renee Baker, she's like a puppeteer expert. So we literally picked up shirts and bras and underwear. We animated these objects. And then from that, I think the ironing was just something that derived from that, because we knew the piece, as well as having words in it, we love movement and just the whole. And then Sue Eiffold wrote a Bernice, and that was the piece that was in our exhibition. So there wasn't that much performance in the exhibition apart from the soapbox writings, and the synchronised ironing was in the exhibition. So we decided it was so fantastic. It had an airing, pardon all of these wonderful washing puns, it had an airing at the exhibition, and we thought, well, we've got to give it another airing to dry it out in our performance.
It was great. And Bernice with that fabulous Scottish accent. I couldn't have told she wasn't Scottish, actually, when Sue was doing that performance. That was absolutely brilliant.
We couldn't think how to end this. And we had all sorts of ideas. And then we decided that we needed to make it much more general, you know, applicable to all women, not just to Cambridge women, not just to us. That was when we got this idea of a story at the end that brought us together. But, you know, all our way of working is that everyone, you know, it's very, very collaborative, very shared process. So there's always input and output. You know, we're always kind of things are evolving the whole time. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say where the original ideas come from, because we just get very excited and we run with them, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the joy of
development. A lot of the ideas that we had, because we interviewed a lot of people, didn't we, when we were doing the first part of it, you know, the first part of the thing, we were gathering evidence because we got this funding from the Heritage Lottery Fund. And we interviewed the people in the Women's Institute and all, and a lot of ideas came from that, the sort of fun bit. The whole thing about loving shirts and hanging them up, we got from the Women's Institute, because they were, you know, we said, how do you hang your shirt up? And everybody went like that, and it was all different, you know, and some people did it this way out, and some people did that, and they were, no, you mustn't do it like this. So there were, you know, people, it's a very particular thing, and mm-hmm. people get very excited about it as well.
But it's very general
and,
as well.
Yes, mm. and yeah. it's, but it's very general, and everybody, because everybody has to do it. So I think, you know, a lot of that...
Well, it's a metaphor, isn't it? Yeah. It's like the character says, it's a universal metaphor. Yes. Doing the laundry is like a metaphor for life, and... You know,
it is actually, isn't it? Because it's passed down from mother to daughter as well, to an extent, isn't it? Yeah. Just like everything else in your family life is passed down from mother to daughter, ideals and the way you live.
Mm. Whereas the automatic washing machine has kind of revolutionised everybody's lives. You know, we did interview men as well. Obviously, we wanted to be really inclusive, and certainly men without the automatic washing machine, just when they started to think back, it brought memories back for them and their mothers and grandmothers, and actually them admitting how lucky we all are, all of us, just to press that button. Yet there was something quite comforting about what the women used to do. You know, what we all do now is rush, run, press.
Don't even press half the time.
No. And I think that's one of the things that we all feel has come out of this. It's some of the nice slow pace of what that life used to be like.
This is the sketch of the lady doing the washing in the laundrette, because she wanted to speak to somebody. It was rather touching as well.
Yeah.
Because that's missing, isn't it, from a lot of people's lives?
Absolutely, and that's why that's why some people honestly go to the laundrette.
Yeah, I interviewed a lovely lady who's Turkish, who works in the laundrette on the bridge, Victoria Road Bridge, and she gave me a lovely interview, which we used in our last exhibition, and talked about how at first she found the job quite frustrating, quite boring. And then she realised that actually it gave her huge freedom. And, you know, people would pop in, have a cup of tea with her. She got to know the customers. She could sit down between loads and read a book. She could read newspapers. And she looked at some of her other friends who, like her, had come to this country, didn't perhaps have really good English. They'd ended up working in restaurants and cafes, rushed off their feet. Suddenly she was able to see that she actually, you know, she was lucky. And she really, really enjoys her job. Mm. And people know her. And, you know, it's that old-fashioned heart of the community that is quite hard to find now. And I think laundrettes are still hanging on to that in some places. They still have a vital role to play in communities, you know, as a social glue, as a place where people can talk and be known and ask about each other. So that was something that was brought home to me.
From 10 till 1. Mid-mornings with Phil Rowe.
It's guest time, 11:30, most of the mid-morning shows we find a good guest, and today we've found two. We welcome back Alison Nimmo from the RSPB, working in the Cambridge area, in fact for the eastern area of the RSPB. Along with her this morning, Melvin Smith has rejoined us, who is in the kind of Cambridge support group. Some of them, we call them very keen and eager enthusiasts, all volunteers that go around to look at birds' habitat, help out maybe with the nesting or generally with the environment for all things when it comes to birds. Last month, we weren't talking about birds. In fact, we went off on a little hop when we were talking about hares, as it was March and the Mad March Hares. This month, we talk about the busy tasks that birds have at the moment, I suppose the busiest time of all, as they're preparing to mate, have their young, and of course, do their nest building. Welcome to you both. Thank you for coming back. It's nice to see you both again this week. We also have a few birdsong recordings, so we're going to try that in a little while. The first thing we're going to talk about, though, this morning is the Big Garden Bird Watch, Alison, which has been taking place nationally, started in January, and the results of that are in. It's something that has been happening for the last 20-odd years.
Yes, it has, even longer than that, actually, since 1979. Every January, we invite people to carry out a small survey of their garden birds one weekend at the end of January. The results from that year on year show very well some of the declines in garden birds, also which birds doing well and other wildlife. Thank you to anyone who took part this year. My colleagues tell me 8,000 people across Cambridgeshire sent in their results.
I was going to say, could you break it down into regional numbers of results?
That's really valuable, actually, because some birds are doing well in different parts of the country, obviously. I have the top five birds for Cambridgeshire, thanks to your results.
Let me have a guess. Would it be blackbird, number one?
Not number one, number three, though.
Okay.
Average 2.2 blackbirds per garden, I think.
Oh, right. Yes.
And seen in 83.9% of gardens. So, yeah, most people have one, it sounds like.
Yes. I certainly have two or three of those.
Yeah. Any other guesses?
I don't know. I mean, where I am, but I'm just a little, about half a mile out of the city, so I see an awful lot of wood pigeons, but I only see those in the house that I'm currently in. I never used to see so many. Where I used to live, it was always house sparrows, but they've just declined so many. I don't know. I'd certainly say in the top 10 must be the robin, but I don't think that would be number one. You got me. I don't know. I mean, the chaffinch is pretty prevalent, but go on, Alison.
Yeah, so you've definitely got most of them there. Robin is in the top 10. It's not quite in the top five. House sparrow is number one.
Oh, it is still.
It is, yeah.
I'm so pleased.
It is. In one way, that shows the value of this survey, though, because you can imagine, what with everyone seeing house sparrows, you wouldn't realise there is a serious decline. It's only when you monitor the numbers we have now compared to 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that you see there is a huge decline. So although house sparrow is still number one, the most common bird people see in their gardens, or the most numerous bird people see in their gardens, overall there has been a sharp decline, and that's one of the useful things this kind of survey, group survey, can show. But number two, starling; three, blackbird; four, collared dove; and five, blue tit for this year in Cambridgeshire.
So the collared dove has risen in numbers, isn't it? It's only sort of been around for the last part of the last century, I think, in Britain. But the decline, the starling has been declining.
Yes, again, it's one of the ones that's still common, but this kind of survey can show sort of early warning signs of declines before we stop, you know, seeing them.
I remember as a kid, Alison, being festooned by house sparrows in the garden, just everywhere, masses of the cheeky little birds, of course, and the chirping that you get from them. And I do miss that. It was kind of a thing from childhood, and it just don't seem, in my book, to be around anymore. I mean, has any research been done to find out why? We think it's environment, we think it's changing habitat. Is there any sort of thing in science that has nailed down exactly what's been going on for them?
Not yet. We've been putting a lot of resources into researching the decline in house sparrows, but no conclusive results as yet, which is why we really need to keep on at it. Of course, there are good news as well. For example, goldfinches 14 years ago, 10 years ago, goldfinches were number 14 UK-wide in the Big Garden Birdwatch results. Now they're up to seven. That's possibly because goldfinches are one of those lovely birds with the red faces and bright gold on their wings that actually benefits a lot from people putting out seeds, Niger seed or sunflower hearts. Blue tits are also up a bit, and they're one of the species that really benefits from people popping out nest boxes. So it's not all doom and gloom at all.
And it's nice to have the colourful birds coming into the garden.
Yes.
Because the sparrows, all right, they're a little bit drab, aren't they? Very friendly, very cheeky, kind of mischievous sort of by character, at least to me. But yeah, it's lovely to see some. Melvin, you live fairly nearby. I mean, would you say an older gentleman? You don't mind me saying that.
No.
So obviously your lifespan, you can remember obviously when as a younger man and you are local. Can you remember from quite a while back how much more, again, you would see the numbers of birds in the garden? Would you say been a decline in your lifetime?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, sparrows, for example, were prevalent in cities all over the country. I mean, a lot of people will probably remember in Trafalgar Square, huge flocks of sparrows.
I never thought of sparrows in Trafalgar. Yeah, I mean, obviously pigeons.
Yes,
but,
yeah. And farmyards as well. I mean, they were after the grain in farmyards, and now those have been sealed for obvious reasons, health and so on. So, yeah, it's a combination of things. I think habitat and the environment is definitely one of them that must have driven them out of cities. And food generally, and this applies to most birds, countryside birds, is that the food availability just isn't there now. And so they are dependent, a lot of these birds are dependent on coming into the garden.
My grandfather was an agricultural labourer. He was a foreman on a farm. And I, when I used to go into the little village in the old West Suffolk and see him, my memories of so many starlings then, because of there were cattle, there was livestock, they were rearing and farming pigs, and of course that meant there were little nibbles that the pigs would leave over from the pig feed. I believe now that the starlings, though, they're quite clever birds, and they've been going after silage and molasses for cattle farmers at the moment. It's been a bit of a problem actually, because they've been taking something like 10 or 15% of the cattle feed per day.
Gosh.
It was on TV this week. So
yes, on Country Farm.
Well, you saw that as well. Yes. Yes,
yeah, they
went in and did a little bit of voyeuring, shall we say, on the starlings, right. Didn't they? With a little bit of camouflage.
Yes.
It was interesting to see how they were nabbing in. So now they've changed the feeding habits for the cattle. So the cattle are fed when the starlings roost. So they've gone to bed so that then the farmer can get on with feeding the molasses to his cows without the little starlings cheekily coming in and helping themselves.
That sounds like a good solution. How clever they are reminds me, though, they are fantastic mimics as well in their song. If you hear them around Cambridge, you'll sometimes hear them imitating, for example, a car alarm or a whistle. I believe it's said that a starling once stopped a football match by imitating the referee's whistle.
Whistle? Really? I didn't know of that, because it makes me sort of... Well, I wouldn't like to start impersonating birds. I'd probably never live it down. But I can't really actually remember them doing that. I know when they go to roost in the autumn, obviously once their nesting for the year is done and they're rearing for the year, and they get into these huge packs of birds. Is it called a murder? I know it's a murder of... it's a murder of starlings, I don't know.
Murmuration,
that's the one. And it's amazing to listen to them, because they go into just before dusk and they go into bushes together in their hundreds. And you can hear these sort of shrill whistles coming from them. I don't know if you want to hear a bit of starling. Let's see if we can do this. Let's try that. Let's see if it plays. Oh, yes, there we go. It kind of sounds a little bit like a mixture between perhaps something the house sparrow could do. And as you say, they've got quite a vocal range, haven't they?
They have.
There's two or three of them there. Yeah,
they're very good imitators, as Alison was saying. They, car alarms, cell phones.
Other birds.
So that's what I can hear.
Birds,
then.
Yeah.
I think years ago we used to have those trim phones, which were when it was still post office television telephones before BT, and you could hear them back then. And they're trying to sort of make that trilling sound as well. So what else have you got for us this month? Actually, we're going to have a few more bird noises if you want to hear those. I can probably find them from my catalogue of Cambridge 105 bird noises if you want to try some more.
But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a lovely time of year now. The birds have launched into song to try and hear more of them. It was interesting. I was chatting with Melvin earlier. Melvin, who's been wonderful at identifying birds for a long time. I only got into it in the last few years. And we were talking about that journey into listening or hearing more of the wildlife around you. And over the last few years, it's astonished me how much more I hear stuff that I genuinely was not aware of before.
Yes, it's amazing that during our everyday lives we subconsciously filter out all sounds that we don't want to hear, or we only listen for danger sounds if we're walking down the street, and you can ask somebody and they'll say, oh no, I didn't hear any bird at all. And in fact, if they were to only tune their ears to bird song, it would add to their walk to work or whatever.
And it hears something as mellow and melodic as this, which is the blackbird, which I think is going to play for us. Yes, there we are. I think Oh, no, it's kind of disappeared off. Anyway, I've actually found out more about their genus, which is Zenocanto, apparently, the Latin name for them. For some reason, it's tracked there. We'll try and get that audio back now. Let's see what we can do with that. Let's try this. Now, how could you not enjoy a sound like that in the spring, hey?
It's a lovely spring sound, isn't it?
Beautiful. As Alison described it, very fluty, which is very right. Very joyous, too. Kind of lifts your spirits. I think when you get older as well, you appreciate wildlife a little more than when you're younger. I think when you mellow out, when you mature with age, and you do start taking notice.
It could be
of,
an age.
Maybe
no,
an
I
age
don't know.
Thing.
I think I've mellowed a lot over my mid-20s, definitely. But it is a real pleasure. For example, when I walk into work through the centre of town, over the Mill Road Bridge, and into the centre of town to the bus station, I hear all the birds around me as I walk over the bridge on the side streets off Mill Road. And just knowing there's a wren singing to my right or there's a flock of goldfinches overhead, it's a real pleasure to the start, adds a pleasure to the start of the day.
And you've got a list of some of the best habitats that you feel in Cambridge people should go to. One of them, because it's nearby, Mill Road Cemetery.
That's right, yes. I wasn't able to get there, but my wife visited the Mill Road Cemetery recently, and she managed to count, either see or hear, upwards of 15 species of bird in that relatively small area in the middle of Cambridge. Included amongst those are the song thrush, which is increasingly scarce. Mm. The lovely long-tailed tit, which is a small bundle with a long tail.
Like a flying teaspoon.
That's right.
Lovely description, small bundle with it. Yeah.
And the country's smallest bird, the goldcrest.
Is it?
Yes. And if you can actually get a close, they are relatively confiding, and if you can get a close look at them, they're a lovely colour with a yellowy orange streak on their head. A beautiful bird. So a visit to the cemetery, you just got to listen out for these birds. A way to help you is to go on the RSPB website and to the birdsong section and just listen out for the more common birds, and then visit the cemetery or other wildlife areas in Cambridge, and it just adds to the overall experience for the day, really.
Other great habitats here, places like Coldham's Common, the Botanic Gardens, University Botanic Gardens, which were, actually people were flocking in there on Sunday because it was such a nice day as I came past. You couldn't get parked anywhere nearby, but it's lovely to see people going into there. So great places to go to listen.
Paradise Nature Reserve too used to be one of my favourites when I was a student, just along the river beside Newnham. Tiny little strip of a nature reserve, which is, got loads of birdsong at this time of year.
As you're heading south out towards Grantchester Meadows.
Yes, but not out of the city at all.
Just on the edge of the fringe.
Yeah.
So the other little, it's amazing how quickly we run out of time. We'll finish with some birdsong in just a little while. But you want to talk about Conservation Link.
Well, yes. One thing, obviously it's spring. One thing lots of people are doing is getting out in the garden a bit more. And there's lots of things to do that would help the wildlife roundabout. So it's a great time of year to be planting flowers with lots of pollen and nectar for bees and butterflies. Perhaps popping in a little pond. Doesn't have to be a massive undertaking. I moved a house recently, and my housemates and I are going to try and create a mini pond using a sort of a big old washing up bowl, just dug slightly into the ground.
It's a plastic
with some rocks to make a step down into it. There's a whole section of the RSPB website on wildlife gardening, rsbb.org.uk/homes, for making homes for wildlife. And we're using some of those suggestions, trying them out to see how practical they are. And I have to say, so far, the instructions are very helpful.
Birds will be singing around Cambridge, of course. Right now, they're courting, they're mating. I'm going to end up... Oh, yes, go on, Melvin. Yes,
just a quick plug on this. A topic we could spend hours on, but at the moment we're getting... It's the height of the migration season, so we're getting different birds coming in now.
Have you spotted any of the early ones yet?
Oh, yes, or heard them. Chiff-chaff is one. Not only... It's a little brown job. LBJ, we call them. But it's unmistakable. Its song is... Chiff Chaff, Chiff Chaff.
Yeah.
And so people can listen out for those. Black Cap are in at the moment. And we're looking forward to House Martins, Swallows, Swifts, lots of others. Cuckoo, hopefully.
A good chance to hear them. I know, Melvin, the local group is running a dawn chorus walk.
That's right. Well, Falmier. Yes, if I'll take that opportunity of having a quick plug here. First, our group will be present at Triplo Daffodil Weekend, which
coming this
many
weekend,
people
yes.
may hear. That's on this coming Saturday and Sunday. So if they want any more help or talk to me or one of our group about...
I should be going along, Melvin. I should probably see you there.
Pop in and see us. And, as Alison mentioned, on the 3rd of May at Falmier, RSPB, Falmier Nature Reserve.
Quite nearby to there, just off the A10,
right.
On the little road, I remember, from Melbourne, isn't it?
That's correct,
to get,
yes.
To get there is a good way.
For the early birds, our club is holding a dawn chorus. So if there are any listeners wanting to come along to that, it starts at 5 a.m.
No, this is good.
But
nothing like a nice
we'll
fresh
hear.
Start to the day.
That's
out
right.
In the, out
yes.
in the countryside.
And it's starts at 5 a.m. and it's followed by a breakfast BAP or bacon butty.
Yes,
to
good.
Entice people along. Yeah. But if you do, it's essential that you book that. Meeting so that we know how many people are coming.
And how would you do that, Melvin?
You do that by going on to www.rspb.org.uk/groups/Cambridge,
uh-huh.
Or if you just go onto the RSPB website and click on Things to Do Local Groups and select Cambridgeshire and scroll down and come to Cambridge Group. You can get in touch with us that way as well.
That's great. I should probably see you at Triplo Daffodil Weekend,
okay,
or get
yeah,
along to
course.
Falmier Nature Reserve. I'm not sure I could vouch for being there,
no.
But I'm sure many of you okay. will go along. And I just think ornithology seems to be growing in the UK, which is really nice to know.
Yes.
Yeah, because we want to protect our birds.
We do.
They are, yes. dear, they are dear to us.
Yeah.
Thank you both for coming in again this morning.
Okay.
It always
Thank
goes
you.
By so very, very quickly. Hopefully we'll see you back again next month in some shape, size or form with another topic for us. I'm going to leave with one bird song that's really kind of driving me nuts, but in a nice sort of way at the moment. And after a little bit of correspondence with you, Alison, I figured out what it was. I will say that the RSPB website's great at managing to identify birds for you. You've got a wonderful A to Z of birds with the illustrations, both of the male and the female of any particular species, and their bird song. This one, though, is a real, real bird call for me. Melvin's nodding. He knows what it is. Alison's looking a bit...
No. This is one of the instances where I find thinking of a particular way of remembering it that a colleague told me is incredibly useful. If you listen to it, it sounds like a cricket bowler running up and bowling the ball.
Okay, yes.
In
the,
my
the,
head,
the
anyway.
The footwork, the scuttling along, the
yeah.
bowler. And that is, of course...
The chaffinch.
Yep, the male chaffinch. It's up in my beech tree at the moment, giving this call. Really, probably, I think he's probably on shift for about 6 or 7 hours a day, so I'm hearing him doing that. But it's nice, it's really nice, the window open, and it does surely tell me that it's
lovely.
Spring.
Yes.
Thank you both.
From 10 till 1, mid-mornings with Linda Ness. Cambridge 105.
The National Federation of Young Farmer Clubs is one of the largest rural youth organisations in the UK, with over 25,000 members and 644 clubs. It kind of surprised me, but it is a huge organisation. The Cambridgeshire Federation are launching a membership promotion called Operation Oink. And as part of this drive, wooden pigs will be appearing around Cambridgeshire throughout April. Now, to tell us what the young farmers get up to, we have Carly Pomfret. And she is in the Cambridgeshire Federation of Young Farmers. Welcome to Cambridge 105, Carly.
Hello.
Hi. So the young farmers, presumably you've got to be part of the farming community in order to join this, have you?
Well, not really. It's good to have a keen interest in the countryside, but I'm not from a farming family particularly, although my boyfriend is a farmer, and I met him through Young Farmers.
Mm-hmm. Ah, right, okay. So it's kind of open to anybody. You just, but it would be pointless if you didn't have an interest, because that's what people are going to be talking about, isn't it? Presumably.
Yes, yeah. I mean, like I say, a keen interest in the countryside, but not necessarily a farm. You know, you don't have to be a farmer to be a young farmer.
Okay, and what age range are the young farmers?
10 to 26 is the membership age, but you can be an associate lifetime member and continue it as long as you wish, really.
Ah, okay, well, that's interesting. Okay, so from 10 years old you can join?
Yeah. Some activities are over 18, and obviously some activities are for younger members. We try and cater for everyone.
Ah, now, what activities do you do? What do you get up to?
Well, we get up to all sorts. What don't we do? Basically, you have three levels. You have club, county and national. At club level, you meet weekly, do all sorts of different activities. Recently, we've been on a ghost walk. They're going to Activity World last night, rather. Do cooking competitions, different speakers. Mm-hmm. They can cover anything. I've just recently organised a visit from the Drug Squad Police, a retired policeman, so that should be quite interesting.
Yeah, oh, that is. So you have general topics as well. It's not just about fertiliser and
no, that's very minimal, the actual farming part of it. And then of course we have county stuff, where we organise the county show, which is held at Wimpole in June. Have lots of competitions that we collect rally points for. Ooh. That ends in June, and over the year we gain points for that, and that can be anything really. We do woodwork, cookery, metalwork, flower arranging, and some of these competitions you do at county level, and then if you do well in it, you go to national level, which is obviously countrywide. We also have the national AGM, where lots of young farmers, I think it's about 4,000, descend upon Blackpool.
Oh my goodness,
in May,
me.
Yeah.
Chaos.
for the annual general meeting over a long weekend. And there's also things like travel opportunities, which are subsidised and organised and sometimes funded by the Federation as well.
That sounds great. It sounds like lots of fun, actually. I take it. It must be. You look like a fun
Absolutely.
Person.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is a lot of fun, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Today I'm speaking to Carly Pomfret, who is from the Cambridgeshire Federation of Young Farmers. And Carly has been telling us all about what young farmers get up to. Well, maybe not all of it, I'm suspecting, Carly. But she's been telling us about the bits that she can repeat anyway. I see that you do training and in different activities too. So tell us about that.
Yeah. There's lots of training opportunities available, actually. Some of them are quite sort of agricultural based. I mean, you can get forklift training, teleporter training.
Teleporter?
Teleporter, yeah.
What's that?
It's a telehandler. It picks up things like bales and...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It sounded to me like one of these things that can transport you from one place to another.
Yeah, it's like a farm forklift, basically.
Okay. Okay.
You can also have B+E trailer training. And all of these are usually offered at like a favourable rate or with good discounts that comes with being a member.
But very, very useful, presumably, if you're in that community.
Yeah, yeah. There's also things like training for a bar licence. So when we hold events... when we've had like a ball or a disco, barn dance, you know, if you've got the bar licence, it's easier to be...
What a good idea. You know, more organisations should do that and they become more self-sufficient. They don't have to rely on other places. That is a great idea. So you train up your members in order for them to be able to be licensed to do that, presumably.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a great idea. And this recruitment drive that you're running, I believe... There are wooden pigs appearing in the fields of Cambridgeshire. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm not 100% sure how we settled upon pigs. I think the ring Operation Oink was part of it. but, you know, hopefully they make people smile, get them interested, follow up the website and, get some more members, really.
So it's really just something to attract people's attention.
Yeah. I mean, if you see a wooden pig on the side of the road, hopefully you'll look.
Exactly. Oh, that's brilliant. So, the important bit, how do people get in touch with you if they're interested in becoming a young farmer?
Well, the best way to contact us is via the website, which if you Google it or search online, for cambridgeyoungfarmers.co.uk. All the contact details are on there for each individual club or for the county as a whole. Just drop us an email or give us a call and we'll point you in the right direction.
Oh, that's fantastic. Carly, thank you very much for coming in today and I wish you luck with your recruitment drive. I think, you know, it sounds like you've got a great organisation there and a lot of imagination goes into things. So I think you'll do very well in getting a lot of members and a lot of new members joining you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Carly. That's Carly Pomfret from Cambridgeshire Federation of Young Farmers.
From 1 till 4. Afternoons with Becky Marcus.
Then, so I don't know if you have seen on our Facebook page, if you go onto your normal Facebook account and you like Cambridge 105, you will see a very beautiful, attractive photo of me holding a jar of something squidgy in it. My face is all really, it looks disgusting. I don't know if it is disgusting. It looks all right now, I suppose, that I see it from this side of the jar. But anyway, we have that photo on Facebook because we have Julia with me in the studio. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
So you're from the Cambridge Science Centre.
Yep, we are.
And you are here today to kind of let me know about something very special that's happening in the next 2 weeks.
Yep, we've got lots of events coming up for the Easter holidays. We've got lots of chances for really bad science puns. So we're getting experimental. We're doing lots of experiments with eggs and we'll be testing how strong they are, checking what they're made of and doing lots of hands-on experiments with them. Lots of drop-in workshops so that families and children can come along and find out more about
them.
Eggs,
does that have anything to do with what's in the jar?
Oh, it does. This is a thing you can have a go at home in your kitchen.
So, shall we now? I think we'll announce now what's in the jar. What is in the jar, Julia?
So, in the jar is it's a jar of vinegar, and we've just put a regular hen's egg in there. And what's happened is the shell has dissolved. So, all that brown gunge that you can see is the eggshell, and that's made of the same sort of stuff as chalk. So, it dissolves in acid like vinegar, and you're just left with kind of tough membrane, a bit like skin. So, well, you know, when you crack an egg and you've got a kind of membrane inside, that's
the bit that catches on the shell and it's really annoying.
Yeah. So if you're feeling brave and want to take the lid off the jar, you can give that a little prod and see just how tough that membrane actually is.
I might, when I'm off air, when I don't have to press any buttons, because I don't really want to leave the studio smelling all eggy for Julie when he comes in and does 105 Drive. Okay then, so we have some really gruesome egg here, so you can just do that at home.
You can try that at home. It's really easy. All you need is an egg and some vinegar and a jar and tolerant mum, I suppose, so she'll let you do that in her kitchen. And another thing you can try, because we've been told that if you take that egg out of the vinegar and just leave it in the open air, the shell should re-harden, but we haven't had a chance to do that. So if you can do that and you can get a picture of it, tweet us, that would be great.
So that's just that's kind of an example of the experiments that you're doing next week and the week after.
Yep, we've got all sorts of egg related things coming up. So we've got little workshops where you can come along and have a go at dissolving the eggshell yourself. We're going to be testing how strong eggs are and seeing how much weight we can balance on top of some eggs before they crack. And we'll be having some visits from lots of researchers at the university as well, and telling us about all aspects of eggs, from how little fish develop to how you can do some maths with spinning eggs. We've got all sorts of things going on. Yeah.
Well, that sounds really exciting. So that's mainly for, is it kids that I'll have the school holidays then?
Yeah, we're open all day every day in the school holidays from 10 till 5, and there's something going on every day, so you can check our website and find out what's going on the day. So our website is www.cambridgesciencecentre.org. There's a list up there of everything that's going on. So we've got our experiments, we've got our researchers, and we've also got a visit from a company called Science Ninjas, who are going to come and do shows about all sorts of things, from matter to kitchen science, and a really good one for all the lovely gross things that go on with your body called things that make you go ooh, and we'll be looking at all the slimy and smelly disgusting things your body does that are actually really essential to keep you healthy. So maybe one for the grot loving little boys out there,
for the people that like toilet humour, say.
Yeah.
I think I know a few boys that you might want to come along to that.
I do too.
Okay then, so you know it really is a lifesaver, I suppose, because I took to my two girls that I look after during the summer holidays there. I was only looking after them twice a week, but oh my gosh, it was exhausting. And I just took them along to the science centre. I kicked back in the corner and they just messed around and played with all the interesting experiments that went on, and I had like a little nap for a while. Actually, it was lovely.
Yeah, that's great. Lots of people come in and say, oh, it's quite small, and we are quite small, but we've got a lot packed in, and we never have anyone leaving saying, there wasn't much to do. We have kids who are begging to come back after lunch. There's lots of things to play with. All our exhibits.
They didn't want to go for lunch. We were supposed to go for lunch at a nice restaurant afterwards. No, they did not want to leave. So it was really a lifesaver. So we were just saying before that the thing in the jar is an egg.
It is. It's an egg minus its shell.
Yeah, believe it or not. And actually, you did not take the shell off yourself, did you?
No, I haven't touched it since it went in the jar. It's just an egg sitting in a jar of vinegar, and the vinegar's dissolved the shell away, and you're left with an intact egg, but
in fact,
no shell.
If I look at it closely, you can actually see the shell at the bottom, kind of all...
That brown gunge.
Brown stuff, yeah.
That brown gunge. And if you can see all those bubbles in there, that's bubbles of carbon dioxide that... get released when the shell dissolves.
Right.
Acid and the chalky stuff the shell's made of, and you get carbon dioxide bubbles. So
this is just an experiment that you can do at home, or one of many experiments, I suppose, that you have on offer for the next 2 weeks at the Cambridge Science Centre.
Yep, we're doing lots of experiments with eggs. We've got the vinegar egg test, and we're also going to be testing how strong eggs are, see how much weight you can balance on an egg before it cracks. And we've got lots of researchers coming in to talk about all sorts of aspects of eggs as well. So we've got on the 7th of April, we've got someone coming in to talk about zebrafish eggs and how they develop from a tiny egg into a fish.
Zebrafish.
They're little tiny, they kind of look a little bit like mini stickleback kind of things, really tiny little fish.
Are they stripy like a zebra? I know this is a really silly question to ask.
You know, I can't remember. They probably are. You'll have to come in and find out.
Well, there you go then. Exactly. Find out.
I'm guessing that's where they got their name from. Yep. We've got someone coming in to talk about the maths of eggs and how eggs spin differently when they're boiled or when they're fresh or when they're gone a bit stale. So he's coming in to talk about spinning and the maths of that. And then we've got some people coming in to tell us what goes on inside a chicken's egg before it hatches. So you can come and find out how you get a chick.
Oh, and as far as getting there, where exactly is the Cambridge Science Centre? Because I didn't know where it was in Cambridge until last summer.
We are on Jesus Lane, so right in the centre of town, 18 Jesus Lane. It's really easy to find. In the centre of town, really convenient. Great if you're out shopping and you want a little diversion for an hour to keep your kids happy.
Well, exactly. It really is a lifesaver, isn't it? Because, you know, you're really tired maybe and you're kicking some moaning and you're just like, there's the science centre. Let's go and have a look and see what's happening.
Yep, come in and have a play.
Yep. And so you're open between what hours?
We're open from 10 till 5 every day in the school holidays. That's from tomorrow, Saturday, until Easter Monday, including Easter Monday. And we're also open Easter Sunday, all the bank holidays.
Oh, gosh.
So every day.
And as far as entry, do you have to pay or is it free?
No, you do have to pay. So it's £2.50 for children, £3.50 for adults, or we do a family ticket, which is £10. And that's for one adult and three children. They don't necessarily have to be your children. It can be your child and their friends, or two adults and two children. That's £10.
Okay. That's really good. And if they want to find out more about the Cambridge Science Centre and the programme?
Yep, so all the details about what we've got going on are on our website, which is www.cambridgesciencecentre.org. And we've also, you can tweet us at CAM Science Centre, and that's the centre without the E's in it, so CAM Science Centre.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Julia, for coming out all the way here to Cambridge 105 and having an interview with me. And thank you for bringing in this lovely concoction of egg and vinegar. I think I might be brave, and in a minute I'll play like two songs back to back, and I'll brave it out and I'll have a look at the egg inside the
I'm
jar.
I'm going to make you open the lid and have a little prod.
I think we might have to get Julia back in here with the camera. Thanks so much, Julia.
All about the city.
Cambridge 105.